Vicky Hyde, Steve McCabe on the panel with us after four. With us now, actually. Good afternoon, Vicky.
Hello there.
Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon.
The decision to leave the ferry terminal at Picton, a chat with Bernard Hickey about a few matters pertaining to interest rates, loan-to-value ratios and the possibility of a housing downturn. Is Lord the most influential teen in the world? The lottery scam that duped even the intelligent among us. The consequences that youngsters should face when throwing rocks off motorway overpasses and guarding our coastline with rifles against boat people. All to be discussed with Steve and Vicky. But Susan Baldacci is here to talk about what the world is talking about. Good afternoon, Susan.
Hello, Jim. I'm sure we've all wondered, what did the Greeks play when they were, you know, having a toga party or, you know, going down to the Greek baths and that kind of thing? Well, let's party like it's 400 BC. A musician from Oxford has produced a piece of music written on a rock from thousands of years ago, and this is what it sounds like.
It's cool hearing that.
There you go.
That was all right.
That's from way back.
400 BC.
You know, I'm sure all kids complain about their parents' music. Well, you know, what can we say about that?
What do you think the father of whoever was playing that was probably saying in Greek 400 some years ago before BC? Well, you know, it's terrible. You can't hear the words, can you?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure these things never change.
Turn it down.
That's right. Well, you know, and they know that that's how it probably sounded. I mean, of course, this is before music notes on, you know, staffs and all that kind of thing. But the Greeks had a mathematical ratio for music intervals. So it was really more of a math quiz to get the tune into, you know, to be able to play modern. But, you know, speaking of words, here is the translation of the words to that song. When you're alive, shine. Never let your mood decline. We've a brief span of life to spend. Time necessitates an end.
Wow, so they even rhymed in English, those ancient Greeks.
That's, they were so
that
smart.
Is just fantastic.
That so it's like the ancient Greek for YOLO, basically.
Yeah.
It's ancient Greek for YOLO. It is so interesting that he did this.
Yeah, fascinating. What a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
So there you go. Now you don't have to wonder what they played at the hip toga parties.
On the reed pipe.
Yeah, on the reed pipe.
Is it on iTunes yet?
I'm sure it will be.
Excellent.
Huge. Lots of downloads.
I want to get the 12-inch remix.
Now, while we're talking about music, Bruce Springsteen is going to be the basis of a course at Rutgers University in the United States. And there have been other people who've studied his music, but this is an interesting way. It is actually a theology course. They're going to be looking at the songs of Bruce Springsteen and how they relate to religious references. Mm. And if you look into it, a lot of the boss's lyrics have lots of biblical references, mostly from the Old Testament. He was raised Catholic, but redemption is a common theme. He talks about Mary quite often. A lot of the stories, there's one about Jonah and the whale and raised a Cain. You know, the whole biblical sort of, you know, father and son tensions and Jesus was an only son is another one of his songs. So yes, at Rutgers, you will be able to get a university credits towards studying Bruce Springsteen.
Springsteen 101. And you could do Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan. You could certainly do Bob Dylan while you're in there, couldn't you?
Well, I'm sure
I wonder
lots
what,
of people.
Vicky Hyde, what do you reckon you get out of comparing what Dylan said?
I guess it makes a change from Madonna. I think she's had an entire degree devoted to her at one university
true.
In the US. It's always interesting to see what sort of stuff people can read into lyrics and into literature. I just hope that they don't ruin it by
over-analysis.
Being forced to study it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Now, a story that we have actually, some video we have posted on our Facebook page. I think we've all probably wondered, I know I have as somebody who flies quite a bit between here and the United States on those massive planes with so many people. Well, they've just tested the Airbus A380. And that's this new plane that's going to be able to carry 853 passengers and 20 crew. And they've just tested it to see if, in fact, it can meet the Federal Aviation Administration's safety requirements that all of those people can be evacuated in less than 90 seconds. And sure enough, That's exactly what happened. The video's on our Facebook page. That's less than the time it took for Friante to win the Melbourne Cup last week, and they got all 853 people and 20 crew off of those planes. Of course, the plane wasn't on fire, and people weren't panicking, but they all got off.
Yeah, but that is the acid test, isn't it, when the plane is on fire and people are panicking. It looked very orderly, didn't it? It was very swift.
I'm sure you can do lots of things if nobody panics.
Yeah. And they certainly bundled them off. I didn't know they had so many evacuation slides. There are about five slides coming down.
Well, you'd need
out of the
with
side
that many people. I mean, there's 853 people on that plane.
Yeah.
If it's flying at full capacity, so you need a lot of slides for that many people.
I think it'll be a bit more like Flying High. Actually, have you seen that movie? If the real event occurred, I think it'll be Bedlam. You'd hope not, but.
Well, you know, people who talk about, like, the ones who are on that plane that landed in the Hudson. They talk about how actually remarkably calm quite a few of the people were. So I think you can get lucky because, of course, panic spreads panic. So if you have a whole lot of people panicking, it's not going to go well. If you only have one or two, you can sort of be like that nurse in the movie, or you know, where he slaps or not the nurse, the nun.
Well, I've mentioned this before. My wife's an anxious flyer. And one of the things that she likes to do that really calms her is before they take off, she asks to be introduced to the flight crew.
Oh.
And so if there's anything, she says one of the biggest problems is when you're sitting there, you've got no idea who's driving. Mm. You've got no sense that someone's in charge and is running the show. When you hit anything that's in any way anxiety causing. And so if she's running into turbulence and thinks she's going to freak out, she's like, yeah, Fred's got this. It's all good. And she can picture.
So Fred comes down from the cockpit and says hello to your wife.
Yes.
Yeah, but what happens if Fred looks like he's about 18?
Yeah.
Fortunately, you know,
like
when she's doing something like, you know, the long distance flights across to the US, it's usually not an 18-year-old that's got driving
that's
a 747, fortunately. But it just, you know, it gives her a sense of confidence.
Yeah.
And once the turbulence hits, does Fred come down to further reassure her?
That wouldn't be very reassuring.
It has been known to happen once the turbulence has calmed down that Fred comes back and everyone's going, why is he talking to her? What's this?
Fred comes back and says, actually, this is bad.
Yeah.
That's not good.
The only time I've ever actually been afraid on a plane was one time I was landing in Seoul on a United Airlines jet, and it was like really, really bad weather, and it landed so hard that the stewardess sitting opposite me went pale. And that's how I knew it was time to be scared. It's the only time I've ever known. Watch the flight crew. If they're okay with it, then it's probably something that can be handled.
So you were watching her face and you saw the colour drain from it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
The only time I've been scared on a plane is every single time landing in Wellington. It's worst. I'm sorry. It's just the worst landing. I hate that, flying in and out.
Well, the best thing you can do to actually prepare yourself for any emergency, and it's might sound boring, but it is, count those seats between you and the nearest emergency exit. That's been the single most significant factor when they've gone and analysed evacuations and people surviving crashes.
Okay. But don't work out if you can clamber over the top of them.
Yeah. Well, I have wondered about that from time to time.
Yeah.
Now, 90 seconds to evacuate 853 passengers, 45 minutes to convict an infomercial man for criminal contempt. This is in the United States. This is a man called Kevin Trudeau.
Is he well-known? He's well-known, isn't he?
He's pretty well-known in the States. He's been doing infomercials for all kinds of things for a very long time. At first, he was selling products themselves, remedies for things like AIDS and hair loss and just about everything you can imagine.
That's a hell of a spectrum right there, really, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And he was told he was actually done for selling products that were, not what they said they were. And he was told, of course, you have to stop that. So he was trying to get around it by not so much selling the product, but selling a book about certain products.
Yeah.
And his latest book was something called The Weight Loss Cure. Not the weight loss solution or the weight loss this could help you, but the actual weight loss cure. And he says it's the weight loss cure they don't want you to know about. And it was supposed to show people how to lose weight and still eat whatever they want. And you can imagine how that went. Not well. He was warned by the FCC that he needed to cease and desist making claims that he couldn't stand up to. But he didn't. He kept going. And he has actually now, a jury in 45 minutes, convicted him of criminal contempt. And he could be sentenced. He will get some prison time. And it could be up to life in prison. Which is an interesting range for that particular crime.
You see, his lawyer said, you know, prosecutors just don't understand advertising. And I noticed there was a real estate case, the decision handed down today, the court acknowledged that there's a certain amount of hyperbole and puffery or whatever in claims. But this seems, well, I don't know. We don't know the entire background, but he's going to go to jail for basically promoting a diet that he made exaggerated claims about.
You mean, it was more than exaggerated claims. I mean, he basically was saying you can eat whatever you want, when in fact the diet was 500 calories a day, which is a tough diet to stick it to.
That was just a typo. After that, he put up to 500 calories.
And included prescription hormones. But here was his defense. The jury was told by his lawyer, if he had said what was truly in the book, he would have sold fewer books. That's why he chose to lie about it. He didn't understand advertising.
Yeah, it's a bit like the homeopathic industry, which can advertise its arnica, for example, and not actually admit that there's no arnica in their products because their products are diluted until everything inside them's gone away.
And here come the texts to Vicky Hyde from the homeopaths and naturopaths. Thank you very much.
And they never warn you.
To write back to
they
them.
Never warn you the dangers of an underdose.
Very funny.
Now, while we're talking about miracle foods, I think the solution instead of buying this book is eating chocolate. I always like the stories that say that eating chocolate is the solution to everything.
Just about.
Eating chocolate could lower levels of abdominal fat, according to a new study. Now, of course, we're not talking about the chocolate we all really like.
Of course.
We're talking about the bitter, really dark chocolate.
Oh, that is the chocolate we really
this
like.
Chocolate you like? Oh, I like the milk chocolate. Anyway, new research, this is from the Nutrition Journal, shows that higher chocolate consumption in adolescents was actually associated with lower BMI, as well as other markers of total central and body fat. So it's placement of fat. It's where the fat is as much as it is your overall weight.
Does it have to be the dark, bitter chocolate, or can it just be the quite nice-tasting, energy
dark
chocolate?
I'm sure it can't
be.
Well, energy is okay. Energy is not the milk chocolate. So, well, they're not more specific about the different types of chocolate, and they're also not very specific about the amounts, but they did find that adolescents and they did a similar study for adults, but they did find adolescents who had chocolate, consumed chocolate, did have that lower BMI. And part of that could also be I'm going to give myself a little treat. I'm not going to have the chips and all the other stuff because my treat's going to be just a little bit of chocolate. I think.
Oh, so you still need self-discipline.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
If you eat caramello, can you lose a little bit?
No.
I don't think there's a study that shows that, but we'll keep looking.
The chocolate coating around the caramel offsets the caramel in the middle. It's a wash.
Thank you.
Now, here's an interesting story about hunger. This is a study that was done at a university in Denmark, and it actually found that hunger can make you more charitable. Interesting way they did this study. They took 104 university students. They had them refrain from eating and drinking for 4 hours. They gave half the group soft drinks that just had artificial sweetener, and they gave the other half soft drinks with carbohydrates and other things that would make them feel a little fuller. And what they found, and then they gave them questionnaires about issues involving social welfare. And what they found was that students who had been given the artificial sweeteners and therefore had lower blood glucose levels and they were more hungry, they expressed stronger support for social welfare than the ones who had more filling drinks.
I wonder if some of these students are wise to these techniques by now and think, okay, they're starving us. I'll pretend to be more generous when they ask us
the question.
Well,
they don't really know what it's a blind thing. They know they're having a drink. They know they're going to be asked some questions. They don't know what the survey, the research is about.
Yeah.
So interesting. Yeah. Perhaps they needed to give lots of withhold drinks from the Conservative Party in the UK. This is an amazing story. The Conservative Party has attempted to erase a 10-year backlog of speeches from the internet. These are speeches made by Prime Minister David Cameron and the Chancellor George Osborne. And this is after many promises during the election campaign to democratize information. These have been removed from the Conservative Party's website. And they've also used something, I've never heard of this before. It's called a robot blocker on their website. So when you try to search in a search engine an old archive of a speech, a little note comes up saying, sorry, you can't access that anymore.
So when you try and find out what campaign promises they made back
in a speech.
Yeah. They don't exist anymore.
They don't exist anymore.
That's very sensible.
Possibly sensible.
Wasn't that Winston Smith's job in 1984? Mm-hmm. Doing exactly that.
Ooh, creepy. So yeah, I don't know how they're gonna get away with that. I think now that someone is wise to them and has pointed out what's going on, that might be changing.
Mm-hmm. You got time for one more?
And just before we go, instead of just wearing colored contacts to change your eye color, a surgeon has pioneered a technique, an artificial iris implant that will allow you to change the color of your eyes forever. Personally, I wouldn't do it myself, but it is a cornea silicone implant. You can have them for your eyes now, too.
Blue-eyed, brown-eyed, green-eyed, whatever you want.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Susan Baldacci. Coming up on the panel, Steve McCabe with Vicky Hyde.